and welcome to the High Ground podcast. My name is Clee Stacey and I am a life coach.
My name is Anthony Turi. I am a therapist, and for 6 episodes we're going to be chewing over what coaching is, what therapy is, and our different takes on spirituality and personal development. Hello, Clee.
Hello. I'm so excited to be back.
I have to say I'm feeling a little bit emotional because this is the final episode 6 of this season of our podcasts.
Oh. But because we couldn't stop, we've already planned next season.
Absolutely. And more of that at the end. A bit of a taster for you listeners. We were talking just before we start to press record. Do you want to just press a moment, take a moment to just pause? Because you were talking about that as an idea. I like that.
So, yeah, I just invite you, Anthony, and you, our wonderful listener, to just arrive where you're at. So just take a deep breath, a deep, gentle breath, and just really get into the space wherever you are on your walk. If you're sitting at home, if you're listening, cooking, just really arrive where you're at. Lovely.
It's really lovely. And that's something we both like to do in our client work, is have that moment at the start to arrive and set an intention and see where we're at. And so, well, where we're at today is just a minor topic I've gone for. I thought we'd discuss life, the universe and everything as our season finale.
When I saw this, when you suggested it, I was like, oh my God, is this like 40 minutes? We're just going to discuss it. I mean, the truth is, obviously, there is one answer to life, the universe and everything. And it's very simple.
Hit me, hitchhiker.
It's 42. Very clearly, obviously.
Douglas Adams.
Oh, brilliant. I love that book. I love the films. Anything Douglas Adams. Brilliant.
It's interesting because I love the interplay of this, how we've gone about creating this series. Because I wrote down these headings and then I wrote, oh, okay, life, the universe and everything. And then I thought, well, what are we going to talk about? And then we had a lovely moment of flow when we were planning, when you just came up with lots of ideas about this topic. So what, listeners, what we're going to do today, we're going to talk generally, I guess, about the universe. Just the universe. Then we'll talk about how these ideas infuse our work in therapy and coaching. Then I thought we could do a bit of a season wrap, kind of what we've learned, overlaps between therapy and coaching, and then a bit of a taste for listeners of what's coming up in season 2. How does that sound?
I am so excited. And as usual, my flow will take it elsewhere, I'm sure, and you'll pull us back in. That's how we work.
That's okay. You are the universe. So am I.
Well, exactly. We are all one. We're all exactly the same. And that's why it works so well, I think. When we're really, truly connected, and let's just dive straight in, is that when... And I almost think, like, when I used to hear people say, when you're truly connected, I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, come on, what does this really mean? And it's really a felt sense. It's really a connect. The connectedness is just a sense of being, and just, it's a not, and we've talked about this so much, but not thinking, just being conscious that we are everything. And it's such a weird thing to say, because when you say it, it's in your head. Even everything feels like speech itself is thought based and in the head. So the only way to experience it is to shut up. So I mean, we could just have 40 minutes of silence and allow people to really enjoy the beingness of being. I mean, we could do that one time. Interesting. But I'm that's kind of the, I love the answer 42 as the answer to life, the universe and everything, because it means nothing. Because it actually doesn't really, like, it is that simple. What's the answer to life, the universe and everything? It is just existence. The answer, in my opinion, as the universe expressed, so you should listen to me, it is that simple. It's not overcomplicated. We all overcomplicate the answer to life, the universe and everything. It is really simple. It's our human brain that overcomplicates. It's not that the human body isn't intricate and incredible, and we have blood cells and different kinds of blood cells that work intricately with each other and impact things and cause and effect, and, you know, nature, and you've got ecosystems, you've got tiny ecosystems. I can't, my brother would be able to tell you all about ecosystems and bio, all sorts of funky stuff that to my mind is insanely complicated, but it's not complicated, it's just what it is. It's just what it is.
And if you look at, you know, the idea across, you know, different religions, different philosophies, different spiritual writers, it's really interesting that they often come back to the same core, the same premise, this idea that, you know, we are all one. We're all a oneness. We are all energy. And if you really get down to the essence, you know, reality is an illusion. I mean, this is something that even Einstein was going on about, you know, the illusion of separateness. There is no, and this is reflected in spiritual ideas. You know, there is no me versus you, you know, we are all connected. Not just socially, but I mean, I believe, and you do too, clearly, you know, that on a profound level, we are all interconnected.
And it's, I still have to catch myself, because it's not been a huge amount of time that I've believed this stuff. And so the old me still goes, are you sure? Are you sure this is how life is? Yeah. And it's the ego mind that says we're separate. And it's what I find really interesting is that that ego mind is trying to keep us safe, right? And there's something about the humanness and the ego mind as a mechanism. Our brain is nothing more than a tool and a mechanism, a very impressive one, but a tool nonetheless, to keep us alive, to keep our physical body alive. And it's really important to remember that it's keeping our physical human body alive. It is not designed to keep our spirit or our soul alive, because it can't. That's not its job. It's designed to keep our physicalness alive. And in the physical world, a lion can eat me. And so, yes, we all have those programs that keep us from being eaten by lions.
And we respect those programs. You know, we've both spoken about when our clients, even in ourselves, when, you know, that lizard brain part of ourselves that wants to protect ourselves, you know, that's there for a reason, and that's fair enough.
But it's not buying into it. It's not buying into it fully, wholly as who we are. I am not my ego. My ego is there to keep my body, physical body, safe. And that's what I'm using at the moment to express myself here on this podcast, to express myself in life at the moment. But it's not who we are. Our ego is not who we are. That survival mechanism isn't who I am.
And what I love about this broader spiritual perspective in terms of, you know, the survival mechanism is, once you are able to move into this kind of broader view, you get, and you see yourself as an extension of source energy, as part of the universe. Then you move into the idea of, and we both like this idea, you know, the universe has your back. We live in a benevolent universe. The universe is looking out for us. There are signs available. There is support available. If we just let go and tap into, you know, it's not just a concept. It's not just an idea. Oh, that's interesting. We're all one. It's like, if we can let go and really tap into the signs, you know, the sense that there is a universe, a field around us supporting us, which is malleable and available to us. And that everything is actually working out.
What a concept. What an idea that everything is actually perfect. And
can you riff on that a little bit?
It's going through my head and I'm like, how do I express this?
Let's pretend I'm a skeptical person who doesn't believe in any of this stuff. And I'm saying, well, what do you mean I'm the universe? What do you mean the universe has got my back?
Yeah, I mean, it's fucking mental, really. So I'm going to go sideways for a second because I want to answer a different question. I was starting to talk about how the ego is there to protect you and keep you safe. But how interesting that when we're in our heads and when we're in our ego, how much of the time do we feel safe? Like, actually the felt sense of feeling safe, how much do we really feel it when we're in our heads? When we're going, well, I need to avoid that because that's going to feel difficult. I need to avoid taking that risk because that feels hard. So whilst it's keeping us physically safe, I know, personally speaking, I don't feel safe when I feel fear.
That's really great, because as you made that point, I just dropped down into something deeper.
Right.
Because before I was being a bit cognitive and I was in my head, and I think there was probably a sense of, I hope I'm explaining this clearly. Maybe there's a bit of fear. I hope the listeners are getting this. And as you then spoke about, you know, dropping into that feeling of safety, I dropped down into that spiritual sense, and it was more of a embodied feeling, you know, in my chest, in my stomach, of like, oh, it's okay. You know, we are loved, we are held.
And that's the beauty of it, is that I used to feel really skeptical. I used to feel very skeptical of religion. Spirituality was like not even in my sphere. It wasn't even in my world. It was woo-woo crazy shit that people with tie-dye tops do. Religion was more accessible. I knew people who were religious, but I still saw it as something other and crazy. And, you know, when people would say, well, it gives me a sense of safety and it gives me a sense of peace, and I'd be like, well, why don't you just find peace in the fact that, you know, the world is beautiful? So I guess in a sense I was already spiritual, but actually it's not that they weren't doing that. It's that they recognize something that I didn't at the time, is that I was using my ego and my brain to keep myself safe, and yet it never did. And I don't know anyone who lives in their head that feels good, because ultimately that doesn't make sense in itself. Because when you're feeling, you don't feel with your head, you don't feel with your ego, you don't feel with your mind. You feel in your body, you feel in your heart, in a space that doesn't even exist. Like, very often we feel in a way that we is outside ourselves. And so how can you possibly feel safe in your body if you're using your mind? And so this universe has your back, God being the God self, connection to source, the truth of why that feels so safe is because it's unending. It's because it can't die. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to solve. There's no problem. There's growth, but growth from, I get to learn more, isn't that exciting? Not in an ego, I'm shit right now, and therefore I need to be better. It's not that ego-y growth. It's fun to live, isn't it? Isn't it fun to be here and to be expansive and to play in this world and to
connect to something wider, broader than ourselves.
And be that broadness as well. So it's connecting to other is really connecting to different versions of ourselves. That's why we relate to it. That's why we find it interesting. It's because it's all us. It's just a recognition of yourself in another.
I know we've both spoken about off mic, Gabby Bernstein's book, The Universe Has Your Back. And I just opened it up at a page here. And she's talking about meditation, which is something we both do. And she says, while sitting in the deep stillness of meditation, I notice my energy shift as it reorganizes with the energy of the universe. Calibrating your energy in this way is like a musician tuning an instrument. Once we're tuned in and connected, we become aware of the synchronicity and support that are around us. Does that resonate for you?
Oh, I got chills just listening to it. Yeah, and it's not forced. It's not efforty. It's not trying. You don't have to look for the signs. You don't have to look for synchronicities. They will just show themselves to you in a way that just feels like, ah, oh yeah, you know, like, oh, there it is. Oh, of course. Oh, right. When people, you know, talk about, oh, looking for signs, looking for signs, looking for signs. I am currently looking outside my window, and the house opposite me is number 11. And I only realized that a couple of months ago. And at the moment I realized it, I was on a call with one of my coaches, and I said it to him, and he looked out at his window and he had the exact same thing. And it was like this beautiful moment of like, ah, okay, I'm exactly where I need to be. And if you're listening and you don't know why this is important, number 11 or 1111 specifically is said to be a universal sign of transformation and new things coming and happening. And that's always felt true. It's always felt true for me. It always comes at the right time.
And this brings us in a lovely flow onto the next topic I want to discuss, which is, as you alight on the idea of synchronicity, I'm thinking about, you know, relating this topic, you know, this broad topic more specifically to our client work. And, you know, how is this relevant, someone might think. And I mean, one starting point I have is we live in a connected world, and often it's fascinating to me how the synchronicities of the clients who come to work with me and the issues they bring have resonance with things I've been going through in my own life. And the synchronicity of, and resonance of clients and therapists or clients and coaches finding each other. And how this, you know, this interconnectedness can come into the work. Is that something you find?
Every single one of my clients has come into my life for me as much as for them. Every single one of them. I learn so much through every single one of my clients. And we've spoken about this before, about how the relationship of the client and therapist or coach is really, really important. And this is also where it comes in as importance. It's like that connectedness. It's not, there's no power dynamic at play. It's or authority. There is a different, the job of the coach or the therapist, there is a role. There is definitely a different role. But we're all just humans, and we're all just spirit, soul, higher being, connectedness, whatever. And so to be really present in the role that you're in, but also as a reflection. And that's the role we're in, as a reflection. But everyone is a reflection, no matter what role you're in. And I find that it's so powerful. Even on my therapy training and in my coaching training, when they train to be like clean coaching, which is essentially don't give any part of you away, really. Just ask questions. Don't, you know, otherwise it's mentoring, otherwise it's something else. And I always found that to be a little bit disconnected. There's something about it that didn't resonate or work for me, because the power is in the relationship as much as anything else. And that it's not that they said that that wasn't true. It was, there's a holding backness, and that doesn't work for me as both a coach and a client. As a client, it's really powerful for me to hear what's going on for my coach or my therapist, to notice how I impact them, how they impact me. And that relationship in itself is actually, really, I think you and I could both agree that some of the most powerful shifts with this work can actually be about the relationship that you are in itself. Because everybody talks about to their friends what's going on with their partner, or what's going on with their kids, or what's going on with their, you know, I have this thing going on, and so I'm going to talk to other person about it. But what we very rarely do, what most people very rarely do, is have a conversation with the person who it's affecting openly, non-judgmentally, exploratively, without needing to come to a specific outcome, just being in the moment and exploring the space. Most of the time we kind of do that with someone else, and then we go in thinking, okay, I need to control the situation. But actually what we should, but what works is actually going into those conversations openly, powerfully, acceptingly, non-judgmentally. And when you do that with a therapist or coach, and you do that about the therapy, about the coaching itself, you're actually training yourself to have those conversations, to be able to be okay with that other person, be able to notice what's coming up. And I know I have that with my clients and as a coach, like, and that allows ultimately you to be you, like you to be really you. And then that ripples. I feel like that landed for you.
Yeah, it really did. Well, I mean, what really landed for me is the fact that you are resonating again with some key concepts in Gestalt therapy. So I don't need to bring you over to my side, because you're already over here.
I'm camped out. I'm there. I've got my campfire set up.
I mean, in Gestalt therapy, right from the beginning, one of our core ideas is the idea of field theory. That's our worldview. And field theory sees the world and reality as basically, essentially holistic and interconnected.
Mm.
So, yeah, the universe, everything is connected. The scientists in the labs, they've done experiments on how an observer actually changes what they're observing.
Yeah,
everything is connected, you know. And in the same way, in our therapy, right at the heart of our therapy is the idea that everything is interconnected. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what that means is two things. And I was really resonating as you were talking. So if everything is connected, any behavior is a function of that person in their environment. So in the olden days, therapy would see it as like, you know, here comes a client, they're talking about stuff outside of therapy. And they bring it to this objective therapist. But we, with our field theoretical view, we go, well, you know, it's impossible to look at a person outside the environment they're in. You can't look at a fish without reference to their environment. A fish in water is different from a fish on a sand dune. Yeah. So the person, as they're showing up in the therapy room, is implicitly a function of the field they're in, which includes the therapist, you know, which includes what is going on between therapist and client. And so we speak to that directly in our work. You know, we are aware of how, as a therapist, we may be impacting our clients. Mm. And we also respond to how the client is impacting us. Mm. You know, we exist, you know, therapist and client together. That's a little field we've created. And we talk about that. And that, as you say, addressing the relationship directly gives the client the experience of being authentic about a relationship with, and those skills which they can take out beyond the therapy room. And this is lovely because what you're saying, you know, has triggered so many things for me in terms of therapy practice, spirituality, scientific discoveries, you know, this idea of mirror neurons, which is, they've had in the last 20 years of, you know, when you're feeling something, I'm having a resonant biological response within me, you know. So, and even you just saying, no, I could see that landed with you, you know, even across Zoom and video calling, you could tell that something had happened for me in an embodied form. And I'd responded to you. And that's something I seek to do in my client work very much is say, oh, you know, I'm noticing something. I'm noticing a tightness in my chest as you're talking. I'm noticing a feeling of ease or, you know, tensing up or a need to take a breath as you speak. So I really seek to notice my resonance with my client and share that. And that's just a very practical way in which the idea that we are all connected comes into our work. And I'm glad that despite your initial skepticism of therapy, you resonate with that.
Oh, what I've worked out, but I'm actually a freaking therapist. But here's the cool thing. I was about to say I haven't trained in therapy. I mean, haven't really long term. I've done a certificate, I think it was a certificate or diploma, I can't even remember. It was like 4 months of, don't get me wrong, it was deep, and I got through. I delved into my own.
You went there.
I really went there, and I'm so grateful for it, because it brought up stuff with my mum and stuff that just wouldn't have come up otherwise. It was absolutely transformational for me. But what I mean to say is that I haven't really had any, I mean, I have had some official psychotherapy training, but not half as much as you've had. And why I think I want to say this is because I had, still have a little bit, this idea that therapy is like this super professional yet sticky, muddy space to just talk about crap over and over, but it has super professional, and you know, therapists are this, they've been trained in this stuff. And actually the fact that you're saying to me, actually Clee, you have a lot of therapeutic skills, modalities, concepts, theories that I use with my coaching and in my life, in my day-to-day, how I live my life, the fact that the things that I do are the things that you do in a therapeutic setting, it helps me, and hopefully you guys listening understand that therapy isn't that bullshit thing that I thought it was. Like, there are different modes and modalities of therapy, lots of them. Freudian therapy is not the same, you know, sitting on the couch, closed eyes, and talking whatever you need to say for an hour. Big props to it. There's a space for that. But I've experienced that. I remember when my therapy training, you know, we tested different modalities, and just having someone sit behind me whilst I was lying down, and I just closed my eyes and I felt their safety. And that was the thing that made it. I think I was just expressing things, and stuff came up for me that I hadn't experienced before and that I hadn't vocalized before. But I, looking back, and even at the time, it was a really safe space. I felt really held. I felt really safe.
There's something for me in that about but it was the person. You had a felt sense of safety from that particular person. Mm. Mm-hmm. I mean, which again comes back to the idea about how we're interconnected, and you know, the resonance you feel with a particular person is going to be probably crucial in any type of therapy or coaching work. You've kind of landed us on the third thing I wanted to talk about today, seeing as we're kind of on our season finale. It might be interesting to just review the roads we've walked down in terms of, you know, what we've learned, where we've journeyed. Because I think from a starting point of therapist over here, coach over there, I think we've kind of come into closer alignment over the course of this series. So, you know, therapy and coaching more generally, you know, where are you at now? Where am I at now? What, you know, what do we think about our two fields?
Well, I think they both bring us to higher ground. Oh, did she? She did.
Smooth.
Can't help myself.
Very nice.
It's so interesting because, you know, as we talk on the podcast itself and also outside with friends, I have realized that perhaps I do have a therapeutic quality to me. But what that really means is that I give space. And I don't hate therapy. I think there is quality and therapy, and there's also crappy therapy. I think there is quality coaching, and I think there is crappy coaching. And it's really down to finding that person. And you know what? It's not even coaching therapy. It's friends, relationships, in all of life, where you find yourself feeling safe enough to be yourself. And that might mean in terms of therapy to explore what's going on for you, might maybe in a deeper way, in perhaps working through trauma or working through experiences that are difficult currently, or in coaching, which is more future focused and more goals based. But I think in all of that, no matter where we're, if we're looking at the past, if we're living in the present or looking to the future, what is the foundation of that is to be authentic about it, to be true, to be real, like what really happened in the past, not the stories I've been making up, not the bullshit that I decided that it meant that now got me where I was, like what really happened. What really happened? Or in the moment, what's really happening here, right now? Where are my stories showing up? Where's my inauthenticity showing up?
What do you really feel in your body?
What do you really feel in your body now? And then as a coach, and as a coach looking to the future, like, what do you really, truly want? What do you want to be living into? Not what society tells you. Not what you want to do to please your mum, to make your parents proud, to fit in with your social group, not because you've trained or gone to university or done something and you feel like you have to now do that because you spent so long or so much money on it. Like, fuck all of that. What's true? What do you really honestly want? What, if you said it out loud, that you want, gives you like a sense of relief and that you know that to be true. Mm. And I think the foundation of what we both do is that, is truth. And the way that we both create that is through safety. And a lot of it's safety.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as I said in an earlier episode, you know, one phrase that always resonates with me is, you know, no safety, no therapy. Mm. I mean, what I also enjoyed was when we were planning this episode, we alighted on the idea that we both started, you know, over there in terms of me bit skeptical of coaching, you skeptical of therapy, and we've journeyed closer together. But that seems to reflect a broader alignment in our two fields, because, you know, therapy started out, you know, from a more medical model with the psychiatrists, you know, looking for deeper problems, you know, diagnosing cause and effect. And you know, I learned from you that coaching actually comes from, you know, sports coaching. Mm-hmm. And hence the emphasis on goals, you know, whereas very broadly, crudely, it seems like, you know, therapy started out by looking back and coaching starts by looking forward. But our two fields have actually come closer together in terms of, you know, in terms of therapy, we look at now much more of an emphasis on resourcing clients and what resources they have available to them in terms of where they want to go. And we bring in goals and aims for therapy. Mm. And we tend to see, and Gestalt has always had this, you know, a view of individuals as having innate potential to achieve what they want. Mm. And so we've become a bit more forward thinking, and you know, I get the sense from you that coaching, or at least your practice, you've become less goalie and you've become much more interested in the staying with, in the being with, which has always been at the heart of Gestalt therapy. And you made a lovely point when we were prepping this episode to me, that you said, well, because we're all human beings, we all need similar things. So the two professions have inevitably come up with similar conclusions and approaches. Mm. You know, the clients guide us, you know, to what they need, you know.
Yeah. I think it's worth remembering that not every therapist is the same. Not every coach is the same.
Absolutely.
Not every human is the same. We come at things from different places. We resonate with different people at different times. You know, a therapist or coach that I was working with last year, 5 years ago, is not the same. I wouldn't resonate with them now. Or maybe I would, because they'll have grown too. And I just kind of want to do a almost double reflection, or like an observation, just taking a step back even further. And this is something that I was talking to a client about this morning, was the process of doing anything is as important as where you're going. And I know it's like the journey is more important than the destination, but it's more than that. Like, it's so easy to say these things and like, what does it actually mean? And I really get a felt sense. I'm using that phrase a lot here, which I really love, the felt sense. That the process, you can't bypass the process. So the journey of us creating this podcast, look at our microphones now, you know, we both have microphones, and working out how the techie stuff works and uploading stuff, and also the process in relationships or in business of really going through the process of what works and what doesn't. And any coach, you know, coaches can be quite salesy. That's kind of the joy.
I'm laughing here because another term for Gestalt therapy is that it's a process-oriented therapy. But this is what we often say. We often say, you know, we're less interested in the story. It's like, you know, I'm angry with X, I'm angry with him, and we're less interested in why, more interested in how, you know. So where are you angry, and how does your anger manifest, and how are you feeling it now? Let's explore the process of that now in the room. So I'm loving that you're talking about process.
For God's sake, I can't help myself. Yeah, and it's in every process, in every part of life, and people will sell you things. Everyone will sell you on the fact that I can get you this. I can get you this fast. I can sell you this, so that so many coaches will say, I went through all this. I had all these experiences so that you don't have to. I'm going to give you the answers so that you don't have to find them for yourself. And I'm coming to a conclusion that, like, what? Like, how is that going to help me? Because the reason that person is so grounded and so certain and so confident in where they are is not because they've learned, it's not because they have the answers. Mm-mm. It's because they've gone through the process of finding the answers. So as a therapist and a coach, we could, you know, I know that sometimes I'll see a client and I can see, okay, this is probably your problem. This is probably your problem. And this is probably your problem. Mm. I can diagnose and I can give them the answer. Mm. It won't change anything. Sometimes it feels like it does. You know, sometimes some it feels, oh, at least I know why I'm the way I am. Okay, but you're still the way you are. So the power of coaching or therapy or any process, you have to learn through going through the process. I'm never going to sell a client and say, if you sign up with me, you will definitely get your outcome. I can't promise that because I'm not doing it for you. Mm. You can't do it. You have to be, that's why we train as being the safe space. It's why as a parent, we learn to be the space that's, that the children can play and learn and fail and process and understand. But it, so, and I guess this also means for all of you listening, whatever you're going through, don't fight it. Don't force it away. You're not, your job isn't to get out of where you are ever. Mm. It's to be where you are. It's to learn from where you are. It's to sometimes really useful to imagine what would my future self be saying when you look my future self looking back at this moment, what will that version of me be seeing? Mm. Because that version will know that the process was just more important than the outcome.
I mean, that's a lovely place to almost wrap where we're at, you know, and I totally agree. I mean, I do have clients who come to me with specific goals, you know, in terms of wanting to move on in their career or wanting to get into a place where they can succeed in certain goals they've set for themselves. And I say to them, you know, I can't guarantee that will happen, but I can do everything I can to support you. And more importantly, perhaps to support you, to support yourself, to get you to where you want to go. And also I agree, you know, it's not just a question of words. You've got to walk the path. Talking of future selves, to take the edge off our sadness at this season one ending, we can perhaps offer our listeners a taste of what's coming up in season two, because I've enjoyed this so much.
Have. And I don't know if I should say this, but I'm too authentic. I'm going to say it anyway. I think I just can't wait for season two. I think it might be better than season one. I'm just saying. Sorry to us. Sorry to our old us. Or thank you to old us for the process of going through it so that we can now dive deeper and go beyond. Like the things that we have. So the one that I'm really looking forward to is the importance of play, creativity and curiosity, both in our work and in general life, and how we can. And that one's going to be really good because we can really give some tangible how-tos, which I want to do more of here. I want to get more involved in that. That's where I'm excited. And to have my embodiment coach Pavi come on and talk about music, dance, and how she, even just thinking about her, calms me down. Her energy is so beautiful. And to have you listen to her is just gonna be amazing. What are you looking forward to?
I mean, I personally, I'm really passionate about the subject of trauma. Now that sounds, ooh, trauma. But actually, in terms of the developments in our understanding of trauma, I feel so optimistic about the resources and capacities of human beings to get through things and to grow from trauma. And I feel so And I say this to my clients when we're working on trauma. I say, I know it's a rocky road, but the recovery from trauma, I feel very optimistic about it. It's about uncovering resources and abilities, and the growth that comes from trauma is actually very beautiful and goes to the essence of the human experience for me. So it's a topic that's actually very dear to my heart.
I'm glad you said it like that, because to be honest, I mean, even when we were planning this episode, this season, I said to you, we could put trauma in with dance and embodiment, and that all in with something else. And that was my avoidance strategy. Like, I've done the trauma work. I don't want to go back there. Right. So that was even me trying to avoid talking about it too much, because there is still something that's like, oh, I don't, you know, if I'm over it now, I just want to look away from it. And actually we can look at it with open eyes, and it's weird, because trauma is heavy and deep, and there are places to go. But what I'd love for us to do is bring lightness somehow to it, and bring truth, and just shed light on all that it is, and not make it such a subject.
Well, and absolutely, and that that's been my own learning about the subject and my client work. It's humans have incredible strengths. Humans have incredible resources. So my own trauma work has got me to a very optimistic place about human potential. So I'm very, in terms of higher ground, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. I guess aligned to that and a similar theme is the episode we've got planned on self-compassion and the inner child.
Yeah.
And I like that, how we had them as two separate topics, and you suggested bringing them together, which I think goes very nicely. More on spirituality, obviously. We'll get another one of those in there. Maybe opening that up more to listener questions. And then the topic which I'm actually looking forward to, which has been present here in our work, is, you know, gender, men and women. You know, and I think we could really chew over that in an interesting way as well.
I am so excited for that one. My brain just went, oh, talk about this, talk about this, talk about this, talk about this. So I'm so ready for that one. And at time of recording this, we actually haven't recorded the body set one with Jolie yet. So you've already listened to it. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it, listeners.
I enjoyed recording in advance, looking back on it now in the future.
We love Jolie. Thank you so much for listening to season one. We have had the best time learning, recording, talking, exploring, hearing your feedback, and any feedback that you have, we want to hear, whether it's your shit, I don't know why I'm listening to this, or oh my god, I want more, or please tell me more about inner child work, or whatever it is in spirituality, or anything we've talked about. Question. If you want, yeah, any questions you have, we want to answer for you. And if you want to connect with us, we are on Instagram. We have websites. So all those details are in the podcast details. Thank you so much. We cannot wait to hear you in season two.
Absolutely. I feel deep appreciation for you, Clee, for this process. Also in a healthy way, I feel deep appreciation for me and for us. And for what we've co-created together, and deep appreciation for our listeners. You know, we are all connected, and I can feel that connection with you guys out there listening. So this has been enjoyable, deep, and fun.
It really has. Bringing play, bringing love, bringing purpose to all that we do. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you so much.
Bye.